call the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors to order. Are we on? Okay. For September the 2nd, 2020, the time being at 9 a.m. this morning. Director Polly, would you lead us in the flag, please?
I'd be honored to if we could all stand and face the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with justice for all.
Okay, good morning. This is a virtual meeting this morning, and so we'll ask for a roll call for those directors.
Director Polly. Director Slauson.
I'll just raise my hand.
Here.
Director Record.
Here.
Director Corona.
Here.
Okay, all right. This being the time for any guests that we have here this morning for public comment, any subject within the jurisdiction of EMWD, speakers are required to limit their comments to 3 minutes. If we have anybody calling in, you may unmute yourself by dialing 6. And hearing none at this point, we'll move on to executive reports.
President Sullivan, with your permission, we would like to introduce a guest. Oh. So April Cody, would you go ahead, please?
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. I am happy to introduce Alma Ramirez. She is a new public affairs officer for EMWD. She's joining us today. Alma comes to us most recently from the city of Lake Elsinore. However, she served with us as a WRCOG fellow for about a year. So she has had experience with Eastern in our outreach and specifically Latino outreach programs in the past. So I'm very happy to welcome her to our team and give her a moment to say hello.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. I would just like to take this opportunity to thank you all for the opportunity to be here today, and I look forward to working with a great team here at EMWD and serving our EMWD customers. And I'm here for whatever you guys need.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll have the executive reports.
Thank you, President Sullivan, members of the board. Good morning. My written report's included in your package. I have several items I'd like to cover briefly today. First, yesterday we had a privilege to host the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California's Member Agency Engineering Managers Forum. This is a forum they periodically host, which includes not only the Met engineering staff, but they invite all the engineering managers from each one of the member agencies to participate. The meeting was conducted via a Zoom platform. We were actually going to do this last April, but because of the COVID-19 delays, we were just able to implement it. But the meeting was hosted by Eastern Municipal Water District as a member agency. So we gave some presentations, first a full background on the district. Then we also had a more detailed presentation on our brackish desalination program, the purified water replenishment, recycled water treatment technology we're implementing, along with a video that provided a virtual tour of the Paris and Menifee desalters and desalination complex. The meeting also had some interesting things that Metropolitan and other member agencies presented. They had a great update on the Casaloma siphon seismic retrofit upgrade project from Met staff. And also LADWP presented on their earthquake resistance pipeline replacement project. And then finally, to cap off the meeting, we had our staff from Engineering Services give a presentation on the project management and project control techniques that we use for our capital program and the delivery of that program with such a high execution rate. So it was all very good. But one of the things we had was this video that we had produced internally on the desalters, and so Shayla's going to go ahead and show that now.
Eastern Municipal Water District is dedicated to maximizing our local groundwater sources. However, some of our local groundwater is high in total dissolved solids, or TDS. Because of those high levels of total dissolved solids, or what we'll call salts, EMWD operates a desalination complex. The desalination complex, located in the city of Menifee, is fed through a network of wells and pipelines as far away as Nuevo. The complex is comprised of two desalters, Menifee 1 and Paris 1, and a third desalter, Paris 2, is under construction and set to be complete in the spring of 2021. EMWD's desalination complex takes local groundwater that is too salty to drink and, using reverse osmosis, removes salts and other solids before sending it out to the public. When water enters the plant, it can go one of two places, the iron and manganese building, or straight to the reverse osmosis process. This is determined on what wells the water is coming from. If the water has been pumped from wells containing a high amount of iron and manganese, it will go through a process to remove those solids before moving to reverse osmosis treatment. If the water is coming from wells that are not high in iron and manganese, it will immediately flow into one of our desalters. Using two high-powered pumps, the water is pushed through reverse osmosis, or RO, trains. These trains push the water through semi-permeable membranes that only allow water molecules through and send salts through a different channel. The process has a 75% recovery rate, which means that 75% of the water that goes through the reverse osmosis process is desalinated, and 25% is sent out as discharge to the brine station. Once the water has been treated, it runs through a decarbonator, which serves to stabilize the filtered water and raise the pH levels. Due to the removal of all total dissolved solids from the water, it becomes very aggressive, and in order to soften the water, it is blended with raw, non-salty groundwater before spending time in a chlorine contact basin for a final clean. Once the water meets the state of California's quality standards, it is sent out into the distribution system for the public to enjoy. So what about the other 25% of water that was discharged to the brine station? Well, that discharged water travels to the other side of the plant where it enters the brine line. The brine line is operated by the Santa Ana Watershed Project, or SAWPA. EMWD's brine discharge station is the northernmost post of the brine line, and all the discharged water leaving our desalters travels from Menifee to Orange County, where the Orange County Sanitation District treats the discharge before releasing it out to the ocean. As we mentioned, in the spring of 2021, EMWD will bring the Paris 2 desalter online. Paris 2 will join EMWD's other two desalters and allow us to treat 5.4 million more gallons of water a day. Together, the three desalters will be able to provide water to roughly 30,000 households in EMWD's community. To learn more about EMWD's desalination program, visit emwd.org.
Anyway, that's the video produced internally by the Amanda Fine Motion Picture Production Company. She did a fantastic job, and I think it really shows we continue to kind of raise the bar on the video productions that we're putting together. Under past and ongoing activities, I would like to give a wrap up on some legislation. We follow many, many bills and support and oppose many, many bills. But three bills in particular I wanted to focus on. First, two supported bills that did move forward out of the legislature and are now on their way to the governor's desk include SB 1386. This is the Morlock bill that we've discussed several times regarding local government assessments, fees, and charges for fire hydrants. It passed out of the assembly on a 75-0 vote. And is now on to the governor for signature. I think it also should be noted that as the bill moved through the legislature, it did pick up co-sponsorship from legislators within our service area, assembly members Volpel and Waldron both end up co-sponsoring the bill, so we're very pleased to see that. In addition, another bill we were really focusing on was AB 2560 by Cork. This was the bill that dealt with, indirectly, the PFAS issue, and particularly the state board's processes that they use to set response levels and notification levels. As you know, that we've criticized the state board for that because that has not been an overly transparent process, not as scientifically based as we'd like to see it. And so this bill incorporates some very specific procedures for the state board for their process, including public notification, comment procedures, allowing new scientific assessments to be brought into place, et cetera. So this is a very good bill. It did go, was also passed out on a 74-0 vote, and that went out of the Assembly because of changes made in the Senate to the bill, and it was brought back to the Assembly for concurrence. And so again, those both go on to the governor for signature. He needs to sign those bills by September 30th for them to be enacted. Now, on less good news, our jointly sponsored bill with the California Municipal Utilities Association, SB 414, was unfortunately held in committee. That bill was held in the Appropriations Committee in the Assembly on August 20th. The bill had very, very strong support. As we entered into the final phase of the bill, we had not only very good support from the water industry, but we also had 17 environmental justice groups that, and organizations that supported the bill. The state board was very much on board with the bill and the changes that we had put in and thought it was a very useful tool. However, there was a lot of interesting dynamics at the end of session because of the reduced number of bills that could go through the Senate and the Assembly. In the Senate and the Assembly leadership, we were pretty much caught up, along with other bills, in some broader political issues. In addition, we did have some opposition. CalLAFCO was in opposition, and we did have CalMutuals in opposition. We've already reached out to CalLAFCO, but again, we think that was more the broader political issues that took the bill down this year. So we're working with the author's office. She has is considering whether she wants to pursue the bill. We do have, I think, good support base that we brought. And again, the state board really thinks this would be an extremely useful tool, which was a pretty important milestone for us. So we're going to need to sit down, kind of take stock of where we are, coordinate with the author and CMUA, and decide how we'd like to move forward in the future. Other items of interest to the board, the Purified Water Replenishment Program, which is our indirect potable reuse program that we are proceeding with at the San Jacinto plant that would replenish the Hemet-San Jacinto Basin. One of the things we're looking at is testing additional technology out there. As you recall, we had piloted the Desalitech technology, the closest MRO technology, on our brine to look at brine treatment. And one of the things that we think would be beneficial, I thought would be beneficial, was to then pilot this on recycled water with the idea of implementing that as the treatment technology, advanced treatment technology that we used on the recycled water at the San Jacinto plant that would then be used to replenish the groundwater basin. So the pilot unit has now been set up and a commission out at the San Jacinto plant for testing on the tertiary effluent. And really the goal is to determine the suitability of that technology. The reason we're testing that versus a standard RO train is because of the low, the high efficiency and removal efficiency and the low brine discharge. If you recall, one of the key issues with the potable or the Purified Water Replenishment Project is we would need to extend the brine line all the way out to the San Jacinto plant, which is very expensive. So we've been looking at other alternatives on how to manage the brine. But if we can reduce the brine flow, that would be a key element to perhaps eliminating the need for the extension of the brine line and utilization of things like brine drying facilities out at the San Jacinto plant, which would reduce the cost of project implementation. So that's really the goal of this pilot program, so we'll be setting that up. And also, we're feeling in the future it could provide the ability to provide tours and other things of the pilot operation. So with that, unless there's any questions or comments?
Yes, I have a question. First of all, it's really hard to hear you. It was great when your report started, but it's gotten worse as the report progressed. But I'd like to know if you could give a little insight on Cal Mutual's opposition to our bill and what
sure.
happened there.
Yeah, I think Cal Mutual's, they had previously supported the bill, and we were a little bit surprised that the bill version of the bill that went forward this year, they were not as supportive. They had raised a number of issues. We had responded back to them in writing on those issues. However, they just did not feel that they could support the bill. One of their primary issues was the current version of the bill included at-risk systems. And so these are systems that the state board that, for example, are either financially, operationally, or for a water quality standpoint, are at risk of failing. The state board's currently developing criteria that, and the state board's thinking on this is they don't want to wait for a system to essentially become inoperational and serving contaminated water before it would be considered a candidate for potential consolidation or regionalization. The Cal Mutuals just did not, could not get around that. But what was odd was that the Cal Mutuals group also basically reached out and I think got LAFCO in a more fervently opposed position as well, Cal LAFCO, which was interesting because the mutual water companies are not under the direct jurisdiction of LAFCO in terms of LAFCO can't dissolve a mutual water company or so forth. So it was kind of an odd relationship there. But again, it certainly didn't help things going down the stretch, and we were a little bit disappointed that Cal Mutuals flipped their position this year. Did that answer your question, Director Record?
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Maybe I'll follow up with you later. And by the way, I can hear you much better now. Thanks, okay. Paul.
Yeah, thank you. We adjusted that. My apologies for that. Any other questions from the board or comments?
Yes, I had one question. AB 2560, was it supported by the state board?
AB 2560, I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to find that out whether the, whether they were comfortable. I would imagine, you know, this board this bill was initiated by the water community. Orange County Water District, who's a key player, as you know, in the PFAS regulation, was involved in this bill. So I will check for you, but I would imagine there was a lot of outreach to the state board and some consensus on the process. But I'll confirm that. Thank you. Sorry, I couldn't answer that question.
So do we plan on reinstituting this bill again next year?
I think we're still considering how we want to do that, what portions of it, you know, because as you recall, we also included different elements in the bill
right.
For the environmental, in concert with the environmental justice community. So I think we need to kind of take this fall to take a step back, determine if we'd like to go forward. I think that, as I said, to me, the important thing is the state board really felt that the bill provided an excellent tool. They kind of, for lack of a better term, saw the light this year.
Right.
And they've really engaged with us directly on looking at the bill to how to make it work. And really, the relationship, I thought, was excellent. We spent hours on the phone with them. And this was from their council down to their staff, to including even some occasional involvement from their board members. So they had an interest in the bill and what it could do. They don't advocate, of course, but they certainly helped us refine the bill. So from my perspective, it was a valuable tool. It was recognized both by the state board and the environmental justice community and the water community as a good tool. And so, unfortunately, we got caught up, I think, in a little bit of political turmoil at the end and didn't go forward. But, you know, we need to see if the author is still interested in moving forward with the bill. She's been working this bill for a couple of years, so there's been quite an investment in it, or she wants to move on to other things. So we're still making those determinations, President Sullivan.
Okay.
I have a question. That spurred a question. Yesterday at SAWPA, our legislative advocate, one of the things she mentioned was the costs associated with it, that was...
With SB 414?
Yeah. Was
no, I'd say that was an inaccurate okay. Characterization. One of the things in last year when we were moving to processing the bill, the state board put, when it went to the Appropriations Committee, an extremely high price tag on the bill. And so we worked over the last year and put together a very, very detailed financial model. We provided that financial model to the state board, and we said, you know, this is our look at the cost. If you think there's different, you know, assumptions that need to be put in on hours, on the state board's time, on the cost to process the consolidations, you know, please let us know. They used that model and actually appreciated that, and then the cost analysis they provided to the Appropriations Committee was a fraction of what it was in previous years. And they essentially were in agreement with what we were showing on the cost. So that I don't believe that was a key driver at all.
If that was a last
year issue.
Okay. If that does become an issue, then wouldn't it be, couldn't we point out the cost if it's not done? The cost?
Sure.
I mean, ultimately the state's gonna is gonna have to help bail out systems when they fail.
Well, and they would have to do it on an individual basis, right, versus doing some regionalization and getting some cost efficiencies with that.
It seems like this is going to save money in the long run. I guess that's my point.
Yes, well, that's good. It's a great point, Director Slauson. Appreciate that. Any further questions?
No.
Director Record, any further questions?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Laura.
Nothing today.
Nothing today. Joe.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. Just wanted to add, in addition to the pilot effort that Paul mentioned for the Purified Water Program, we're also completing the Environmental Impact Report to advance that effort, which will be released for public review later this fall. Ahead of that, we're working with Public Governmental Affairs to schedule meetings with individual stakeholders in the Hemet-San Jacinto area, including the Water Master, to talk about the program. But in conjunction with that, we are preparing a comprehensive update to the board and to committee on the Purified Water Program, which we will be providing later this month, as well as first week of October. So the program is moving forward, and we'll be providing a comprehensive update ahead of engaging the stakeholders and ahead of a release of the EIR later this fall. That's all.
Mr. President, I had a question for Joe.
Yes.
That video just triggered me. Could you give a quick 30-second update on the construction out at the desalter?
Absolutely. So construction is proceeding well. As you may recall, we have an agreement with Metropolitan Water District as far as a local resource program funding. So that has very clear deadlines as far as when we need to finish, and that's June of next year. We are on track to have the facility started up by June of 2021. Having said that, there are some change orders that we've encountered. As you recall, the contractor is Kiewit Infrastructure. So to that end, we are planning to approach the O&E committee with a comprehensive update on the construction effort on the Paris 2, as well as where we stand relative to the current appropriation and the current change orders. Overall, I'd say the quality of the work is very good, if not excellent. It's just that there have been some change orders that we've encountered that we've been working with our entire team to address and resolve. So there will be a more comprehensive, detailed update to the committee and the board provided here in the next few weeks.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Super. Okay. With that, let's go to the consent calendar, which is agenda item 3. I'll accept a motion and a second for approval of items 3A through 3F.
Mr. President, I have a conflict on item E.
Okay, you want to remove item E?
I have a conflict. We do business with Krieger and Stewart.
Oh, okay. Item E.
Item E.
I would move the rest of the consent calendar.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All right. We have a roll call, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Let's go to agenda item 3.
We'll do E now?
E, correct.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go to agenda item 3E for a motion and a second.
I'll make the motion to approve item 3E.
I'll second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Dr. Sullivan?
Aye. Matt, motion passes 4-0 with Director Corona abstaining. Let's go to agenda item 4, which is the action calendar. 4A is to approve an authorized award of contract with North Star Plumbing and Engineering for $2,113,000 under specification number 1378W and the McCall Boulevard Pipeline Replacement Project and the additional appropriation of $2,834,221. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. President, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to be here today to present to you our McCall Boulevard Pipeline Replacement Project. By way of background, the project is located in the city of Menifee in the Sun City area. And generally, the pipelines in this area are made of steel, and the soil in the area is highly corrosive. Those two things together create leaks, and so we've had a history of leaks in this area. In addition, the pipelines are from 1960s vintage, and as a result, they're reaching the end of their useful life. So those things together, we identified the need to advance a program in this area for pipeline replacements on a more regular basis. The McCall Boulevard Pipeline is the first phase of this new program, and it's located from I-215 along McCall Boulevard to Valley Boulevard. We're looking to install approximately just under 7,000 linear feet of 12-inch diameter PVC pipe. We're going to add a section on the bridge crossing at the Cherry Hills Golf Course there, and then we'll interconnect all the pipeline as well as provide all new services in the area. The new services will also be of resilient material, high-density polyethylene, to provide a greater level of performance going forward and to combat the corrosive atmosphere that we have. Back in August, we received bids under specification 1378W, and we received about 14 bids, and one of which were deemed non-responsive. After review of these bids, we determined that North Star Plumbing and Engineering was the lowest responsive and responsible bidder with a bid amount of $2.1 million. That's just $200,000 below the engineer's estimate. All bids received after the lowest bid were very close, and so that was a good sign of documents, so we're confident this is a good bid. We have not worked with North Star Plumbing and Engineering before, but after a check of references, the references came back positive, so we feel they'll do a great job for the district. With that, we look to advance the project as soon as possible after award and complete in about a year's time from now. With that, I'd like to recommend we advance a contract with North Star Plumbing and Engineering with a contract amount of approximately $2.1 million, also administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete the construction work, and additional appropriation of approximately $2.8 million, taking the total project cost just above $3 million. With that, are there any questions?
Have any questions of staff? If not, then we'll accept a motion in a second.
I will move the item, Mr. President.
I will second it.
It's been moved and seconded.
I'll second.
Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Let's go to agenda item 4B, which is approve and authorize award of contract and Environmental Construction Incorporated for $4,078,662 under specification number 1388W, the Eucalyptus Booster Pump Station Project, and the additional appropriation of $5,438,026. Greg.
Thank you. Eucalyptus is the replacement for our Elder Booster Pumping Station. By way of location, Elder is located just west of Nason and north of Highway 60. The proposed booster station, Eucalyptus, is located just south of Highway 60. Between Nason and Merino Beach Drive, it's located along Eucalyptus between the Hyde Park development that's currently under construction and the Super Walmart there. It's illustrated there by the red box. By way of background, the Elder Booster Pumping Station, again, was constructed back in 1969. It's nearing the end of its useful life. It's one of our former bunker-style facilities, which are partially below grade, partially above grade. It was identified for replacement due to operational and safety concerns, and it just doesn't have the ability to be expanded to provide enough capacity for the future. With that, eucalyptus will provide us the appropriate capacity now and in the future. It'll alleviate deficiencies in the local zone and provide improvements in safety, efficiency, reliability, and then ease of operation and maintenance. Last month, we received bids under specification 1388W and received about 14 bids, six of which were deemed non-responsive. And of the bids, after evaluation, we determined that Environmental Construction Inc. was the lowest responsive and responsible bidder with a bid just above $4 million. Again, other bids received were very close, very good bid climate right now, so we feel we have a very good bid and just below the engineer's estimate by $300,000. Again, we have not worked with Environmental Construction before, but after a check of references, it was positive, and we look forward to moving the project forward with them. In addition to the construction contract, we'll need engineering support services during construction, so we engaged the engineer of record, Brown and Caldwell, to advance those services. It involves review of requests for information, submittals and shop drawings, attendance at meetings, as well as support during testing and commissioning of the actual final booster pumping station. They'll also prepare an electronic O&M manual for the project. By way of schedule, we look to advance as soon as we advance award, as well as complete in about 18 months from today. The photograph there shows the existing site that we look to develop. With that, I'd like to recommend we advance a contract with Environmental Construction for the construction of this booster, the amount of approximately $4 million. Also, a contract with Brown and Caldwell for the engineering services during construction, the amount of approximately $265,000, as well as administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete the construction work, and additional appropriation of approximately $5.4 million, taking the total project cost to $6.6. With that, are there any questions today?
I do have a couple questions.
Sure.
Did you say that development is still ongoing around it?
The initial phases are in. If you look at that photograph there, a lot of their frontage, I would say they're probably 75% complete the last time I was out there.
Okay.
They may be near completion at this time.
All right. I was thinking if it wasn't, maybe we could put a sign up saying future EMWD booster pump, so people would be aware, but it's all developed right there, so that probably doesn't matter. And then just out of curiosity, what's going to happen to the old site,
the Elder site? The old site, we looked as a part of this project to demolish the old booster pumping station and then most likely surplus the site.
If I can add, we will have to look at the existing below ground infrastructure, the valving and the piping. We will examine whether we need to retain that site versus surplusing it, as Greg mentioned. So we will demolish the above ground facilities, but we will have to take a look to see whether we need to maintain our below ground valving and piping.
So we may end up keeping the site.
We may end up retaining it.
Yeah, we could. Thanks, Joe. Yeah.
Okay. We have any further questions?
No, I'd move approval.
Okay. I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Motion is approved unanimously. Let's go to agenda item 4C, which is approve and authorize award of contract with Scorpion Backhoe Incorporated for $681,700 under specification number 1418SW. For the Romaland MDP relocation project with an additional appropriation of $889,000. Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Armando.
Good morning, Director Solomon. Good morning, members of the board, staff. I'm here to present the Romoland MDP relocation project. The Riverside County Flood Control is proposing to construct phase three of its Romoland Homeland Master Drainage Plan, which consists of installation of a reinforced concrete storm drain box generally within Palomar Road, north of Case Road. There are several facilities in conflict with the proposed storm drain improvements that must be relocated. We have 12 and 14-inch water main lines, 6-inch sewer laterals, fire hydrants, and 2 and 8-inch water laterals. On May 11, 2015, the county and EMWD entered into a cooperative agreement whereby the county agreed to fund and reimburse all costs to relocate district facilities in conflict with the proposed storm drain improvements. The county requested that EMWD lead the bid solicitation and construction of the subject facility relocations. On August 10, 2020, the district received bids that ranged from $681,700 to $2,039,880. Scorpion Backhoe submitted the lowest of five bids received with a bid of $681,700. The engineer's estimate was $539,302. Therefore, the low bid was 26% higher than the engineer's estimate. Staff believes the primary driver of the higher than anticipated bid was a very aggressive contract duration of 78 calendar days. This short construction duration is necessary to meet the county's schedule, and the county has acknowledged the district's intent to award the subject construction contract. The total phase three relocation project costs are estimated at $887,000, which is within the estimated phase three amount of $971,000 identified in the cooperative agreement with the county. That $971,000 includes 10% contingencies within that agreement. Therefore, staff recommends the execution by the general manager of the district standard form of contract with the lowest responsible bidder, Scorpion Backhoe, in the amount of $681,700, and also the administrative award and execution by the general manager of the district standard form of contract with the necessary consultants for completion of the project construction. And finally, the appropriation of $887,000 to fund the project construction, subject to reimbursement from the County of Riverside. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Have any questions of staff?
No. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll accept a motion and a second.
I'll move the item.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Polly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Let's go to agenda item 4D, which is approve and authorize a fourth amendment to the general manager's employment agreement and the issuance of a request for proposals for executive recruiting consultant services to the recommended firms. Paul.
Thank you, President Sullivan, members of the board. This is a two-part item I have today, and it's relating to my retirement and to the selection of a new general manager. If you'll recall, last February, I spoke to the board, expressed my intentions to retire from the district. Then we had a little issue called COVID-19. I think we all felt it was in the best interest of the organization to not have a leadership change at that time. And because really, we really didn't know how the district and was going to operate, what we were going to be confronted with, and so much, and so forth. So at that time, deferred my retirement. But during the last 6 months, I just want to say the district has just performed exceptionally well, as you would expect for Eastern Municipal Water District. We've put together a very comprehensive pandemic response strategy. We've closely monitored the financial and the other key indicators. And as you'll see, for example, we're bringing the end of the fiscal year a financial report to the admin committee this week and to the next board meeting. We're performing very well financially, exceptionally well. We've addressed the issues that we do have, for example, on the aging accounts. Operationally, we're able to provide all of our services at a very high level. And our employee safety has been maintained. If you think about it, we've had very, very few cases considering the size of our employee population. And really, the key thing is we have not had any employee-to-employee transmission of any cases. We've been able to manage those quite well. So as a result, I did communicate with the board. I would like to reinitiate my retirement process. Things are much more stable right now. And so I would want to get the board's concurrence on kind of the terms of the retirement and schedule. And then again, that leads to the two items that we have before you today. The first item is the Fourth Amendment to my employment agreement. The board essentially had previously approved this on February 19th of this year, and then we subsequently rescinded that. So the amendment that's before you today is identical to that previous amendment. It really provides three things. First, that we would have kind of a seamless handoff with the new general manager, such that then when the new general manager does come in, I will be here, I like to say, the Friday before in the seat, and the new general manager will be here the Monday following. And then there will be an overlap, so I can provide support, training, and also to assist the board as necessary for a period of time. And then we would also conduct an open recruitment process using an outside search firm. So the Fourth Amendment, which is provided as Exhibit A, has the identical terms to those previously approved by the board last February. We did update the dates, obviously, that are in that and push those out around 6 months. And this amendment was reviewed by legal counsel. The second part of the item today addresses the selection of an executive recruiting firm. To assist with that process, the Director of Human Resources and I worked on a request for proposal. We also received input from the Executive Committee on that. That request for proposals is included as Exhibit A. It really has kind of 11 key elements for the consultant's work plan in interfacing with the board and conducting the search. It includes a specific schedule and also spells out the selection criteria for the firm and the selection process that would be conducted by the board for that firm. Exhibit C provides a list of candidate executive recruiting firms. So those firms would include Alliance Resource Consulting, Bob Murray and Associates, Coffin Associates, Mercer Group, Ralph Anderson and Associates, William Avery and Associates, and Korn Ferry. As part of this process, Metropolitan is also going through an executive search. We looked at the firms that they were using and ended up adding. We had one of those firms on our list, and we ended up adding an additional firm that they did not use, but that really put in an excellent proposal for their search. And so we'll be seeking a proposal from that firm as well. The draft schedule would be to release the RFP, if approved by the board today, on September 3rd. We would have the proposals due back to the district October 2nd. We'll evaluate with the executive committee the proposals. We'll conduct interviews as necessary with a target date of bringing a contract for the search firm back to the board on October 21st. And then we would move forward with the search at that time. So with that, my recommendation to the board is to approve and authorize the Fourth Amendment to the General Manager's Employment Agreement, and second, to authorize issuing the request for proposals for the executive recruiting consulting services to the firms that I mentioned. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Have any questions?
I have no questions. Paul?
Okay, with that, we'll accept a motion in a second.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Polly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
It's tough to do this because you've just been such an asset around here, and you know, sometimes all good things come to a hopefully a positive conclusion, but you know, I have a confidence in this board that we can find somebody close to match your capabilities for this district, because you've really advanced a number of issues for this district, not only statewide but nationwide, and I just hate to
thank
see
you,
it go.
President
but
Sullivan,
thank
you. I appreciate it. I just want the board to know I appreciate all the support, and I will be absolutely committed to make sure this is a seamless transition, that the district continues to work at a very high level through this leadership change, and pledge my support to the board in doing that. So thank you very much.
I'll just add, you realize the reason you have the support of the board is because you've done a really great job.
Well, thank you, Dave.
It's reciprocal. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and this process that. Really has been outlined by Paul, which is a credit to see that this district moves forward in a great manner. And I want to thank you for all the effort that you put into this particular program.
I'd just like to say again, thank you to Paul for staying these extra months. I know it may not fit his personal situation, but he is correct. Going through the COVID stuff early on when we didn't know where that was going, it would have been challenging for this district to have a change in leadership. So I personally thank you for staying around and making sure that that did not happen. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, let's go to agenda item 5, which is the information items. November 3rd, 2020, general election ballot initiative update, information update on propositions that may potentially impact EMWD. Danielle, thank you.
As Danielle comes up to the microphone, I want to acknowledge with respect to SB 414, all the exceptional work Danielle did. When you get to the end of the legislative process, whether your bill goes forward or not, it is an absolute chaos. I mean, there's requests that come from the bill sponsor, there's letters that come in or issues that come up or amendments that have to be made. And Danielle, during a pandemic, when she had to work at home, just absolutely committed to that, was always responsive, put in many, many, many extra hours, was always available, and just did a fantastic job. And I just want to thank her for her leadership in that. We weren't successful this year, but we've been successful in the past. We will be successful again. And Danielle, I just want you to know she is very respected externally in Sacramento with the associations, now with the environmental justice organizations, state board. And really pulled it together on our behalf, and I just want to thank her for that.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's transition now to November and talk about the ballot initiatives that are going to be on the November 3rd election ballot. So today I'm just going to provide an informational discussion on ballot initiatives, the process, kind of how Eastern has historically weighed in on the election process, provide a really brief overview of what's going to be on the November 3rd ballot, and then really dive into two ballot initiatives that could potentially have some at least direct influence to the way Eastern is run, one fiscally, one potentially hiring and contracting practices. And then I'd be happy to answer any questions at the conclusion of the presentation. So the informational discussion, again, today is an informational item. You are not being asked to take a position on the ballot initiatives. However, historically, Eastern has weighed in on a number of ballot initiatives over time. But as we are discussing the ballot initiatives, I just want to do the standard disclaimer and indicate that as a public agency, we do have a number of parameters and considerations we have to go to when we look to consider a ballot initiative. We may not advocate actively, we may not communicate with the public an active advocacy position, but we may take a position, we may consider the initiative in a very educational manner, weigh both the pros and the cons, and be very fact-based. In taking the initiatives up today, we are also being aware and considerate of the time, tone, and tenor of our conversation on the ballot initiatives. So the November 3rd ballot is a little crowded with propositions. There's 12 of them. There's a number of ballot initiatives that we can assess as having a tangential relationship to what we're doing. I mean, you can take a look at Proposition 14, which would be a $5.5 billion general bond, general obligation bond, and that could really influence, impact the state's finances or the future bonding ability and capacity of the state. So we can talk about those initiatives in that capacity. But again, we really want to focus in today on the two initiatives that really have the most direct influence on the district, and those are Proposition 15, which is a constitutional amendment to change the way that property taxes are assessed on commercial industrial property, and then Proposition 16, which speaks to government preferences. So moving on. Proposition 15, as we know, cities, counties, and some special districts, Eastern being one of them, has the ability to derive revenue from property taxes. Annually, property taxes are generate about $65 billion for the state. And these property taxes go to local governments and schools, community college, et cetera. So generally about 60% of those revenues go to local governments and about 40% of those revenues go to the school system. Currently, property taxes are assessed based off the original purchase price of the land or the building that is purchased, equating to the taxable value. And each year after that, the property tax can be adjusted for inflation at 2%. When the property is sold again, that property is set at that new purchase price. This formula, as we know it today, was established under Proposition 13 that was broadly supported and passed back in 1978. So Proposition 15, which we are discussing again today, was placed on the November 3rd ballot through the signature-driven process. So this proposition is widely referred to, again, the split roll measure, and due to the fact that it seeks to amend the California Constitution, it requires commercial and industrial properties, it does exclude commercial agriculture, to be taxed based on their market value commencing in year 2022, 2023. Yet this preserves the current method and current formula for residential properties. For small businesses with 50 employees or less, this would go into effect in 2025. And an additional exception has been made for properties that are valued at $3 million or less. These properties would continue to be valued at their existing through the existing process. So under this initiative, commercial and industrial businesses worth more than $3 million would pay a higher property tax, with an overall estimate indicating that the 2025 property taxes would increase by approximately $6.5 billion to $11 billion annually. And proponents of the initiative estimate that for the Inland Empire, the revenues that they're expected to be generated would be around $850 million annually. So again, this is for information, just to bring awareness to the fact that the way the property taxes in the state for commercial industrial could be changing and could have an influence on special districts that receive property tax revenue.
So it says that the money would go to schools, correct?
That's what the initiative says.
And when I left my house this morning, I noticed that the schools aren't functioning properly. That'll just be my editorial comment for.
Thank you.
And neither are the businesses that are being going to be taxed.
Just that's correct too.
Yeah. Right.
Just as an observation.
Both are correct. So moving on to Proposition 16, which is the other initiative that we've selected to bring before you today. Which, unlike Proposition 15, Proposition 16 was placed through the legislative process. By way of background, in 1996, California voters approved Proposition 209, and this added a new section to the California Constitution. This section largely banned the consideration of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin in the public employment, public contracting, and public education realms. Proposition 209 was a proposition in response to actions by the state and local entities, as well as schools that enacted policies and programs intended to increase opportunities and representation of people of color, ethnicity, and broadly known, and gender, and was broadly known as affirmative action. So last year, ACA 5, a constitutional amendment, was introduced by Assemblymember Shirley Weber of San Diego. And what ACA 5 essentially does is to repeal Proposition 209 and would be placed and would include this element on the November 3rd ballot. That initiative, or that constitutional amendment, did pass the legislature, and as a result, we are here considering this proposition today. And so what the Proposition 16 does is seek to eliminate the ban on consideration of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin in public education, public employment, and in contracting. Its intended result is to allow state and local entities and educational institutions to choose to establish policies and programs consistent with federal and state law that would consider race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin in public education, public contracting, and public employment. So again, that is if the entity chooses to implement actions or programs, it's not a mandated action on local governments or schools.
So if this passed, how would that affect Eastern? Would we then have to take a position on contracting?
It would be up to the local government to choose to implement actions that would provide additional plus in the for different segments in the hiring of employees, or if we choose to hire contractors, they could potentially get an additional plus in their consideration of their application.
But in the case, the local government would be the Eastern Municipal Water.
That's district. Correct.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes.
It's expressly disallowed under Proposition 209 now. So it essentially allows the local government entity to make those decisions with respect to its hiring practices and its contractor selection.
So if passed by the voters, eventually that question would become before this board, potentially, correct?
That's correct.
It could potentially.
Thank you.
Yep. And again, this is both measures are going to be on the ballot in November, as I've said multiple times. And this item is only an informational item before the board. We recognize that many entities are bringing forward various propositions for consideration, many of which you might be members of. So we wanted to make sure that you are aware of the initiatives and that we are tracking and keeping a broad understanding of the efforts. So I'd be happy to answer any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's going to be an interesting year.
So. Thank you again, Daniel.
Report.
Yes. Okay, with that, let's go to agenda item 6, which is receive and file. I'll accept a motion in a second for approval of items 6A through 6B.
I will move it.
I will second it.
Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Polly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Let's go to the calendar review. Nicole.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. I have one new event for your consideration this morning. On page 5, there's a flyer for an upcoming Municipal Water District of Orange County Water Policy Forum. It is a virtual speaker series, and the featured speaker will be Michael George of the State Water Resources Control Board. That event is scheduled for September 23rd, which is a Wednesday at 10:30 a.m., if anyone is interested in attending. Moving to page 2, I have the board's upcoming meetings for September, for today through the next board meeting. Beginning with Thursday, September 3rd, the Winchester Planning Area meeting, Director Polly at 3:30 p.m. Board Administrative Committee meeting is also scheduled for tomorrow at 4 p.m. for Directors Polly and Sullivan.
Right.
On Tuesday, September 8th at 3:30 p.m., the joint meeting with Elsinore Valley. Thank you. Thank you. Is scheduled for Tuesday, September 8th at 3:30 p.m. That's Directors Corona and Polly. And that is a WebEx meeting. On Wednesday, September 9th, Director Polly has an update meeting with the General Manager at 7:30 a.m. here at the district. On September 9th at 10 a.m., Director Slauson will participate in the Aqua CLE workshop on groundwater quality. On September 9th as well at 3:30 p.m., the Board Planning Committee will meet, and that's Director Corona and Records Calendars. Thursday, September 10th at 7:30 a.m., Director Slauson has a monthly update meeting with the General Manager. And at 8:30 a.m., Director Corona will participate in the Rancho California Water District Board meeting. Okay. On September 10th at 11 a.m., Director Sullivan has an NWRA Western Water Table Talk series. I believe that's number 5 of the 6-part series.
Correct.
On September 10th at 11:30 a.m., the Joint Inland and Orange County Caucuses meeting is on Director Record's calendar. And at 2:30 p.m., Director Record has an update meeting with the General Manager. On Friday, September 11th at 9 a.m., the CalDESAL Strategic Planning meeting is scheduled. That's Director Polly's calendar. On Monday, September 14th and Tuesday, September 15th, the Metropolitan Water District Board and Committee meetings are scheduled for Director Record's calendar. And on Monday, September 14th, Director Sullivan is scheduled to attend the Water Reuse Symposium virtual conference. Also, Monday the 14th at 2 p.m. is WRCOG's Executive Committee meeting, Director Sullivan.
Right.
And on Tuesday, September 15th at 9:30 a.m., the SAPA Commission meeting is scheduled for Director Slauson's calendar. On page 3, we have upcoming board meetings and committee meetings. There are 2 committee meetings noted as reschedules. Moving to page 4, we have the upcoming joint committee meetings and the out-of-office and holiday schedule. Are there any questions or comments on the calendar?
I just want to also note, President Sullivan and Director Slauson, as we get the proposals in for the RFP on the executive search firms, we may want to schedule a special executive committee meeting to go through that. But I'll work with you, and Nicole will work with you to determine the timing of that. But it would give the opportunity to kind of vet those proposals.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole.
Okay. With that, let's go through the calendar review. Director Polly.
Yes, I attended the Water Master meeting on behalf of the district last week. It was a pretty standard meeting, except the issue of some water quality issues came up with Steve Pastor. And in fact, I was going to ask Paul if you wanted to address those, because I know there was some follow-up on them.
Sure, thank you. In the Water Master meeting, Steve Pastor, who represents Lake Hemet Municipal Water District on the Water Master, and Bruce Scott, who represents the groundwater producers, raised issues regarding compliance. It kind of was tangential to the Water Master meeting, but they were talking about compliance with surface and groundwater discharge. Concerns that EMWD would be placed in a position of being the regulatory enforcer, I think were the words that they used. They were somewhat kind of interesting comments. So we immediately scheduled a follow-up call with Pastor and Scott on last Monday. Al Javier was included on the call, and we kind of walked through and tried to understand what their concerns were. Just as an overview, as you'll recall, Eastern Municipal Water District operates what we call the QUAD, the Conditional Waiver of Ag Discharge Coalition, for the recycled water customers and other ag customers in our service area to assist them with groundwater regulatory compliance. By forming a coalition, their fees are substantially lower, and then we manage the technical information that gets submitted to the state or to the regional board for compliance purposes on their behalf. In addition, there is a surface water program, which we are not a part of, that's overseen by RACAC, which is a coalition that was formed to address the TMDL issues. And so we went through with Steve and Bruce kind of where we were on those programs, and they were saying the program's well supported. They appreciate what Eastern's doing, and we asked them, are there any things we need to be changing? And they said, no, that wasn't the concern. The concern they had was that they felt that there were certain farming interests in one of the coalitions that were not complying, and it was causing others in the coalitions to say, well, if they're not complying, why should we comply? Why should we pay our fees, particularly to RACAC, if we're not getting anything out of this? And so they were concerned that somehow we'd be in a position of doing enforcement, including turning off their water. We clarified that was not our role and that we would not do that. This is really up to the state, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, to not only do the enforcement on the groundwater, but the surface water regulations, and that's the regional board's role, obviously. So I think it was a good conversation. We really cleared the air with them, but they were expressing some concerns about some, you know, potential gross noncompliance activities by what they called some of the not as supportive players in the ag industry. And Joe, you were on the call. Did that capture?
No, that's exactly it, Paul. So I think there was just a lack of clarity as far as what our role is, and I think the call clarified our role and our position.
No, but I appreciate you and Joe jumping in before that became an issue at future Water Master meetings. And it was the first time we'd done a virtual Water Master meeting, and I have talked to the Water Master Executive Director and let him know that we are very capable here at Eastern of hosting meetings. And it was hopefully we can get back to in-person meetings at the Water Master, because I think those are a little more effective. Then on the Riverside County Water Task Force, I think it was one of the better ones I've ever attended. The Bureau Reclamation Director was able to come in from Washington, D.C., and it was just a really good meeting, and once again, Paul does a superior job of hosting those. And in fact, I'm hoping after Paul's retirement, we can still convince him to host the Water Master meetings. He is one of the better MCs of it. So that is my report.
Thank you.
Okay, Director Slauson.
Yes, I also attended the task force, and yeah, I thought it was a discussion on the mega drought. I thought it was a good outline of what we might expect. And it was, well organized. I appreciated it. Yesterday at SAPA, we had a legislative update. We had an update on the 2019 Santa Ana River Watershed Sustainability Assessment, and quite a discussion on the program to assess the homelessness impact on the water quality, riparian, and aquatic habitat in the upper Santa Ana River watershed. And we postponed any action at the moment. That's it.
Okay. I did attend the NWRA table talk series. It was primarily on some federal issues with some of the folks in D.C. and Dave Reynolds. I thought it was excellent. Also, I did attend the NWRA Executive Committee and the investment call to give some recommendations on what they should be doing as suggestions to the committee to take $150,000 out of a reserve account and place it into a general account to help defer some of the issues that they have with COVID-19. Also, it was kind of a pleasure to a degree to that being my last board meeting for NWRA. And so we're looking to move on to other pastures that can benefit EMWD. The update with the general manager is always extremely informative, and I truly appreciate that, as well as I'm sure that the other directors enjoy that. I did attend the National Waterways Association conference call, which Eastern has now joined. This is a National Water Association who are rebranding themselves. They have a great deal of influence, you might say, and cooperation with the Army Corps of Engineers, and they're trying to branch out a little bit more so in some other water areas. So it was a very nice conversation. Paul does an excellent job in informing Jennifer and some of the NWC folks as to you know, what goes on here at Eastern and what some of our priorities are. I did attend the National Water Resources Table Talk series on August the 27th. It was, again, very informative talk, and I'll look forward to the last two coming up. The Riverside County Water Task Force virtual event, I thought, was incredibly useful. I think they had well over 200 people that attended this virtual conference. Commissioner Berman did an excellent job, but also some of the water experts from the Bureau and from University of Arizona. I just thought it was an extremely useful virtual conference, and hope that we continue this, whether we have COVID-19 or not, because I think it people that enjoy the topics that we have here, it just spreads the influence of Eastern and also Western Municipal Water District to a more regional and statewide area. I don't know if Director Record or Director Corona attended something that was not on the list here that they would like to report on.
Yes, Ron.
Go ahead, Randy.
Thanks, Steve. I participated in the California Farm Water Coalition board meeting on the 24th. Metropolitan is an associate member of that organization. I think they do a really good job. It's all education for where your ag water comes from. Thank you.
Thank you.
I attended the special board meeting for the Rancho California Water District. Topic of the meeting was to decide whether or not to appoint someone to replace Director Danny Martin. And they decided not to appoint and to allow just the results of the election to replace him. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Do we have any other directors' comments or future agenda items to come up? Council, do we have reason for closed session today?
No, we do not.
Thank you. With that, then, we can adjourn the meeting to our regular meeting on Wednesday, September the 16th, 2020, at 9 a.m. I thank you, everybody, today.
Thank
for
you.
The meeting.
So long.
So long.
Thank you.
That may have been the record time that you just attended hiring those people that were.